daily news, breaking updates, and exclusive podcasts. iTricks.com.
It's The Amazing Show, featuring the amazing James Randi. For more information on all things Randi, including the Million Dollar Challenge, head to randi.org. Hi, everybody, and welcome to The Amazing Show. I'm Justin Robert Young from iTricks.com, and joining me is the reason why we have a show, the amazing James Randi. How you doing, Mr. Randi?
Very well, thank you.
Well, we got an email from one of our listeners
who
goes by the name of Jimmy, and he requested that you tell everybody about some of the stories you have with Alice Cooper.
Who?
Oh, yeah. Rock Alice God, Alice Cooper.
Vincent Fournier, yes. Well, I didn't know him for the longest time as Vincent Fournier, and he doesn't want to be known that way, of course, because he's Alice. And, or as the staff used to always refer to him, Coop.
The Coop. Yeah,
I was dragged into that bunch of strange people. and enjoyed the experience enormously for many months after that, for 9 months, as a matter of fact, which is long enough to give rise to a baby if you're the right gender, and I'm not. I gave rise to quite a few surprises along the way, I can assure you. I was sitting in on 34th Street in a second-floor office that was known as, at one time, Martinka's Magic Shop. A place that Houdini founded or helped to found at one time and owned a share in, but it was later inherited by a man named Al Flosso, known as the Coney Island Fakir.
Okay.
And Al was in the back room, and I was sitting out in the front. It was a place where magicians were wont to hang about for nefarious purposes, of course. And the phone rang. Al answered it in the back, and then grabbing the phone and holding his hand over the mouthpiece of the phone, he said, "Any of you guys here want to work for a rock star?" And I didn't know anything about the rock business at all. And I said, "Yes, but I want $100 in order to just talk to him about it." I thought that would be the end of that.
Yeah.
So Al turned back and he said he wants $100 from you before he'll even talk about it. And he put the phone down again. He said, he says, okay.
And I thought, that's the kind of language that a rock,
the
music business is used to. Yeah.
Yes. That's the kind of language I like to hear. And I said, where's he at? And he said, he's on, I forgot what it was, down in the village. And I said, Horatio Street, that's what it was.
Okay.
And I said, sure, I'll take a trip down there. When does he want me there? And I mumble, mumble, mumble. Right away. I said, tell him to have the check ready. Now, I'm playing with fire here because I'd like to have $100. Now, this is many years ago when $100 was worth a lot more.
Yeah.
What year would it be? That's a good question. When did I go on tour with Alice? Well, I can look that up for you, of course. In any case, I hide myself down to Horatio Street and finally found the place. And I was impressed from the moment I walked in. It was a ground floor apartment, and the door was open, and it had Alice Cooper Enterprises on the door. And it was filled with vases with flowers in them, which I thought was nice, except all the flowers were dead. It looked like a cemetery that had been deserted, more or less. And as Shep Gordon, the boss of this whole affair, who I met shortly after that, told me, he said, oh, yeah, that's to create the atmosphere, you see. Alice has had several shows that deal with dead people in graveyards and such. And I said, okay, I understand. So I walked in, sat down, and some chap or other whose name I will never recall started to speak to me, and he said, so what do you do, and how can you do this, that, and the other thing? And he finally came out with what they wanted to accomplish. They wanted to chop Alice's head off every night for the show. And I said, well, theoretically, you can only do that once. And he said, no, as a trick. I said, oh, now I understand, yeah. Well, I had some.
But it's great that once.
Oh, yes, yes. Fantastic. Oh, yes. And make news, too. Well, for a day or two.
Yeah.
But in any case, I knew a couple of ways of doing it with a guillotine, and those kinds of things can be built rather easily. Well, with a certain amount of labor and expense, but easily. And I thought to myself, I think I can do this. And so I said to him, yes, I think you got a deal. So at that point, he introduced me to Shep Gordon. Now, Shep Gordon is a strange character. Well, hey, they're all strange characters. But he was the manager and a smooth talker and such. Big smile. Face shook my hand until my arm would drop off. And we sat down. We talked about a salary, which was quite satisfactory, I assure you.
Ample.
Ample. Ample is a good way to put it. Thank you, Justin. That's why you're here, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. Just fill in the odd word here and there.
To help the unlearned. I looked at the schedule and thought, this looks pretty good. It was going to be 90 days. 90 days of touring, and we were going to cover pretty well the United States of America, and we were going to go down to Brazil as well, and then after that we were going off to Holland, to Amsterdam, that is, and a couple other places. So, he said, how long will it take you to get all this ready? And I said, well, I'd like to see the scene of the crime, that is, where they were doing rehearsals, which was in upstate New York. And he said, sure, take you up there tonight. You want to go? Sure, okay, I'm all ready. Now, I hadn't been working in quite some time, I must admit, and it was time for me to get off my backside and do something. And I thought, this will keep me going for 90 days at least.
There we go. All right, so just real quick on that thought. This was before you started writing more prominently. This is when you were performing.
Oh yeah. No, I was performing. I was doing colleges and nightclubs and that sort of thing, but it was not steady work, so to speak. It was good work when I had it, but I hadn't worked in some time, and I was sort of living off the bank account.
Yeah.
So this was very welcome, and he just wrote me out a contract. He just, with his hand, he just wrote out a contract, said so much a week, taxes your responsibility, a few things like that, and boom, he signed it, and I signed it, and we made a photocopy of it, and Bob's your uncle, as the Cockneys say. Yeah, it was done, and I was hired. And he hadn't even seen me do a card trick, so he must have had a certain amount of faith in me, but I have an idea that my ass would have gotten fired within 15 minutes if I hadn't produced. So, I went to, who was it? I guess I went to my friend Stanley Palm, pardon me, probably, because he had plans and things like that, that is, blueprints for some of these major illusions. And I was thinking of the Will Rock guillotine. Now, Will Rock was a performer of earlier days who used a big guillotine. The interesting thing about the guillotine is, the Will Rock guillotine, that is the victim, performer, whatever you want to put it, puts his head into the stocks. The pieces slid down over his neck and locked into place. The blade is hauled all the way up to the top and released. And down comes the blade, slam, and the head that drops into the basket is his head.
Ah.
So there's no substitution of a head.
Gotcha. So that's his actual...
The head actually drops into the basket. Mind you, I hasten to add, in case there are horrified listeners out there who are saying, no, it can't be, he lies. yes, it's the performer's head, but happily it's still attached to his body.
Yeah.
One hopes. There could be mistakes.
Everything goes according to Hoyle.
In any case, what I would do immediately after that is reach down into the basket. And I was wearing a disguise, by the way. When I worked for the Alice Cooper Show, I was not billed. My name didn't appear anywhere.
Okay.
I didn't want to be anybody's second banana, and I was like eighth banana or something with all the musicians there and such. And so I did it anonymously, let's put it that way.
Okay.
I just didn't appear. My name didn't appear anywhere.
And you were costume, of course, to go along with
the entire
motif.
Well, when I worked the show, I played the mad dentist as well. And as the mad dentist, I had my hair all over the place, much as you see it right now, as a matter of fact. and I had the dentist smock on and a huge, huge electronic drill with spinning lights and various things on it. And when I was the executioner, I wore a hood with big eye holes in it, so I was not recognizable at all, and a big fur vest, so to speak, that fluffed out in all directions. It was made from a real polar bear, made from rabbit, I believe, and black trousers, big baggy black trousers and big boots. So I was certainly not recognizable as the executioner. And when I, after the head chopped off, I would look in and with a certain amount of curiosity and look up at the audience and look back down into the basket. And it was a woven basket, a wicker basket, that is, which is proper when you chop somebody's head off. I always do my head chopping into wicker baskets.
It washes so easily.
Yeah, well, yes, it washes so easily. And you can throw it away if it gets too dirty. And I would reach down and I would come up with Cooper's head. Now, this was a head that we had to have made. An artist had to cast his face. I've got some pictures of that procedure, by the way, which have never been published, come to think of it. We went. I don't remember the name of the artist at all, but he specialized in making casts of people's hands and feet and whatnot, whatever. And we went out, and Cooper didn't like the experience at all. I can understand that. I've had it done, and it's not a lot of fun, but I don't have claustrophobia at all. He was pretty badly shaken by it. And just lean back in a chair, get your face thoroughly greased, particularly the eyebrows and the eyelashes.
Ah.
For very obvious reasons, because if they pull the mold off your face, the rest of it's going to come with it.
Yes.
And you're going to have no eyelashes or eyebrows. So, and it has to be pulled off very fast. Whoa, what a smart that is. So we got them all Vaselined up correctly and gave him a couple of drinking straws in between his lips that he could breathe through, and some in his nose as well with cotton around them. So he looked like quite a specimen. the pictures must be rather fetching. And the plaster was then poured over his face. It only takes 5 to 8 minutes or so to set. And then the job came of peeling it off. I mean, you have to sort of work your face around underneath it and pull on the cheek skin and whatnot at the side until it works loose, and the whole thing comes off. And le voila, you have yourself a negative of the face. After that, we left it with the artist, and he cast it in fiberglass. In fact, he made two of them just in case one got lost and or broken or whatever, and cast in fiberglass. Then it was painted up, and there was a handle that was riveted into the scalp, so that when I reached in and pulled him out by the hair, I was actually pulling him out by a nylon handle that was in there.
Ah.
Because the wig that we got was not something you could depend on. I think the hair is what come out of that.
Yeah.
So we grabbed the handle.
That's something you could be yanking around all over the United States, indeed. Holland, and Brazil.
But it was a hell of a face because, you know, with his heavy makeup, with the eyeliner and the accentuated features and such, that was easy to replicate on on the chopped-off head. And we replicated the makeup that he used every night, and it looked exactly like Alice.
That's incredible. All right, so give us put us in the scene. Every night you're up there, okay. You chop off the head. What is the crowd's reaction?
Well, first of all, the music it led up to was "I Love the Dead."
Okay.
And Alice would be singing this, looking his grimmest, and he'd slowly walk around to the guillotine, and he'd look at it, and he'd feel the blade and such, and look happy about it. And I'd gesture to him, as if to say, "Put your head in here," and he'd look at me questioning, but singing at the same time.
Of course.
And then he'd step around behind the thing, and lift up the neck piece. It slid up in a groove, and he would place his head through the aperture and then his neck down into the slot that was underneath it. And then I would push down the top part of the neck piece, which had the other half, the upper half of the crescent that would now engage his neck. And there were big clasps in the front, and I would click those tightly shut. And he would still have the microphone, and he would be had the microphone around at the front of his mouth and looking up at the audience by straining his head back, looking at them. And he'd end up with, "I love the dead." And he'd lower his head down, and I'd grab the rope and pull the blade all the way up to the top, look at the audience, and they'd all scream, "Do it, do it." You know, they're very course, happy yeah. about that. Yeah, wanted to see that.
Bloodthirsty maniacs.
And so down it would come. And there was always total stunned silence, because if you look into the gap where his neck just was, you see the blades in there.
Oh.
It's gone right through, and the head has, you see it, fall into the basket.
Yeah.
And I reached in immediately, and I would start to pull the head out, but only pull it out part way, and then put it back in the basket, shake my head. And, of course, I didn't have any expressions on my face. I couldn't, because I had the hood on, you see. Uh-huh. And I would slowly turn to look at them, and they'd all yell, "Let me see, let me see." I'd haul it out of the basket facing away from the audience, and then just slowly turn the head. And Cooper, in the cast head, he had his mouth open, you see.
Ah.
So it looked very much as if that was his head. Oh, yeah, it was a dreadful-looking thing, dreadful-looking thing. And, of course, we had appropriate blood around the neck and coming out of the mouth and whatnot. And I would turn it and look at it, move my head right up close to it as if conversing with it, and then walk off stage with it very slowly. I had a hump in my back, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Yes. I had to make sure I remember which side it was on. Yes, as in Bride of Frankenstein. Not Bride of Frankenstein. What was the Mel Brooks film?
Young Frankenstein.
Young Frankenstein.
Frankenstein.
Frankenstein, pardon me. So in any case, it really stopped the audience dead. There was 10 or 15 seconds maybe where they were totally silent, because I'd always look startled as if the thing had gone wrong. And I'd look around and I'd start to shout, but I'd say things like, "Robot's not Mr. Hart." And no one could figure out what it was, and I couldn't either. Shouting through the mask, you see, and they figured they couldn't understand what I was saying, but it looked as if it had gone wrong, and I'd really chopped his head off.
Oh, man.
Now, at that point, as soon as his head dropped down the basket, he was being dragged out the back. They had two stage hands there to grab him by the ankles.
Yeah.
And just there was a Teflon cover on the slab at the back, and he just went slightly downhill about 15 degrees. Into a basket there, and downstairs and into the room to change immediately. And by, I was still talking to the head when he was all changed into white tails.
There we go.
With a white top hat on and a cane, walking stick, I should say. Shortly after that, they played a couple of choruses of I Love the Dead, and there was sort of bewilderment on stage, and stagehands would purposely run back and forth and shout at one another. They got it down pretty well. And then suddenly the spotlight would swing over to the stairs at the beginning. You'd see Alice come marching up the stairs with all the rest of the band, dressed in the white tails, and looking like the Penguin in the Batman, you know. And he'd twirl the stick around, and forgotten what the music was at that point. But we'd all be singing along with it. And I didn't appear on stage again. I would just go back to the dressing room and change and get out of it and wait for the crew to come back. So it was a very, very good number. Very good number. The show before, he had been hanged on a gallows. Yeah.
Okay.
On a gallows. And they didn't care for that very much, because he always bumping his head on the trapdoor and things like that. But and occasionally, I think twice, we had the blade stick halfway down.
Really?
Yeah, because it had been jostled around in traveling. And I always rehearsed it several times in the afternoon to make sure it was working properly. But it was one of those things where it settled out, and when they moved it on stage, maybe it was slightly sloped or something, and it was out of alignment.
Yeah, I guess if you do it so many times, it's got to go wrong.
I built a level into the side of it so they'd get that adjusted to make sure the supports, because sometimes the stage is a little uneven. Although we were elevated above the regular stage, it was a technical problem in several cases. But if the blade stuck halfway down, it was no problem. They would just cut the sound. I would disengage it, haul it back up to the top, And then we do it again. And it looked even better, perhaps, I think, that way.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that much more gruesome it lays.
And Alice, Alice will be grumping away. Get the damn thing over with. Cut my head off. God's sake, what are you doing?
Unfortunately, that's the end of this week's episode. But you guys really need to make sure that you download next week's amazing show to get part two of this interview about Randy's time on the road with Alice Cooper. Find out what happens when Alice and Randy decide to hustle the rest of the band at darts. And listen for cameos from Alice Cooper's own mom and Woody Allen. We'll see you guys next week. Questions? Comments? Topic suggestions? Email us at randy@itricks.com.